Hey everyone, you're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Brad Pepink, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
In this special report for News 101, I spoke with activists at the rally.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepink was there.
But we've come to think that growth is the very definition of progress.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced student and community newscast, offering listeners local, national, and international news from a fully independent perspective.
What's left of us? Just a big mistake.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening. Again, I'm Brad Pepink, broadcasting at CITR in the Student Union Building at the University of British Columbia. We are in full swing of the Olympics. We are ending week one, the official week one of the Olympics. And while everyone, I'm sure, is very excited about Canada and our placement with the medals, we're hoping that we'll be able to provide you today with an alternative perspective of what's going on in Vancouver during the Games. Today on the show, we'll be hearing from Greg McMillan from the BCCA and one of the coordinators of the Legal Observer program. We'll also hear from the organizers of a rally tomorrow, as well as organizers of the Tent City protest that's happening in the downtown east side. That's all today on News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. But first up, I have Greg McMillan, one of the coordinators of the Legal Observer program that's operating during the games. And thanks so much for being with me today, Greg.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So first, maybe you can just give us an update. What's been happening with the program? Have things been running smoothly since we last checked in with you guys on Monday?
Yeah, things have been going pretty smoothly since then. We've had 24-hour-a-day coverage at the Tent City that you just mentioned, with observers on the street keeping an eye on security forces there. And we're also starting to move into a new phase of the program where now that a lot of the demonstrations have already happened, we're going to have people walking around in some of the other areas of the cities looking for different kinds of right violations, like random stop and search and things like that.
So as of now, a lot of the legal observers had been kind of deployed to go to different protests, but you're saying that in the future, in the next few days, they'll actually just be kind of roaming around downtown Vancouver?
Yeah, obviously, for the first weekend, there was a whole lot of protest activity that we had to have covered. So we basically dedicated all our volunteer resources to that. But in the next little while, we hope to shift things up a bit. Yeah.
Right. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how many people do you actually have volunteering with you? I remember hearing back before the Olympics started that you had expected around 400 legal observers to be hitting the streets. Is that about right?
We've trained 400. We've given 400 the legal observer training and the Know Your Rights training. And from that, we've had about 250 people who have actually gone forward and stuck with things and are on the streets right now.
And one of the curious things that I've found, working as an independent media person within the city is that I get hundreds and hundreds of emails of individual stories, and a lot of the stories are about athletes and their triumphs, but I also get a lot of emails. Actually, I got one email from the police chief in Vancouver about a volunteer that he wanted to highlight, and I get those from a whole bunch of different VANOC volunteers, and I saw that on the Legal Observer site that you guys are also highlighting some of your volunteers and what motivates them. Maybe you could just tell us, in your experience, what are some of the people that have been engaging with this program, and what really motivates the average individual to help out?
Well, we have a pretty wide range of political interests and reasons to get involved. Some people are obviously already heavily engaged in Olympic resistance and various other groups like that. But we also have people who have never been involved in a demonstration in their life. And when they saw some of the restrictions on freedom of expression that were planned, they knew that they had to get involved for the first time ever. So it's really a wide range of reasons for being involved, as wide as possible reasons for concern about the Olympics.
Right. Maybe we could jump back. I'd mentioned earlier the Tent City protest that's happening in the downtown east side. Can you maybe comment about what's happening down there? That's obviously something of a hot button issue because of the way in which the BC Supreme Court has recently been, surveyed as to what the standing is to have those types of structures in the city. What have the legal observers been commenting on about this protest?
Things have been pretty calm there lately, actually. There was some pretty heavy policing the first few days. We've noticed lots of interesting stuff, like police on rooftops doing surveillance. We've seen Canada Border Services Agency, which was kind of strange, doing what they call inland enforcement. So they all act as police and stop people for bylaw infractions or other arrestable offenses, and then start looking to see if they're allowed to be in Canada.
And is that normal? Is that something that would happen if, you know, the games weren't on?
Well, they have said so far that it is normal, that it's part of their routine work. But I've never seen them down there before, so I'm kind of skeptical of that.
Right. And so, is there a way in which could we interpret that as another method of intimidation? Is that just trying to deter non-Canadian protesters to stay away from protests?
That seems to be the concern. For us, the big concern is that the Border Services is acting as a political filter. So they're maybe profiling protester types who might be visiting from Seattle or somewhere else in the States or even overseas, and just trying to make sure that they don't get too involved in any political activity while they're here.
Right. I guess before we go, I wouldn't mind asking you, the BCCLA just released a press release asking, sending out a statement to the police asking them to leave, quote, the big guns at home for demos, end quote. And so I guess what they're just trying to say is that there wasn't any need to have semi-automatic machinery down to quell any type of public disturbance. And so the BCCLA is just hoping that the Vancouver police will be able to engage with these types of demonstrations without that heavy-handed display of force. Is that what's going on?
That's right. I think the military hardware that we saw on display was quite unsettling. Basically, it's a Colt C8 carbine, which is a semi-automatic rifle. It looks like it should be in the hands of a soldier, not in a police officer's hands. Basically, it'll keep firing bullets until you run out of clips completely, just by pulling one bullet for each pull of the trigger. So a lot of firepower on display, and kind of unsettling.
Right, and so that's in addition to the riot police who have been patrolling with batons and whatnot, as well as the regular Vancouver police, and now, as you say, the Border Service agents. So are you hoping that, is the BCCLA just hoping that they'll be able to engage with civil disobedience or freedom of speech without that type of intimidation?
We're hoping that freedom of expression will be respected.
Right.
Obviously, we don't condone violent protest. What happened on Saturday was not acceptable by any standard, I feel. But at the same time, that doesn't give carte blanche to the police. There are limitations on the ways this should be handled, and I think it could have been handled without military hardware.
Right, and so do you have any final comments about what's going to happen with the Legal Observer program in a few days, or if you're gearing up, for the closing ceremonies, demonstrations? Are you expecting another big demonstration or big amount of protest from Vancouverites?
There'll certainly be the housing rally tomorrow, which is going to be from the overnight sleep out by Science World out through to the Art Gallery. So we'll have observers there. I'm sure there will be some other demonstrations that we're asked to attend. And I'm certain there will be something for the closing ceremonies as well, and we'll certainly be there.
Right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us, and best of luck with the Legal Observer program.
Great. Thanks again for having me.
All right. That was Greg McMillan, one of the coordinators of the Legal Observer program operating in Vancouver during the Games and offering a unbiased and neutral perspective of civil liberties during the Games, and especially going to a lot of different protests and making sure that the watchdogs and the police will be watched by these legally trained observers. I'm Brad Pepping in Vancouver, and we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'll have some updates for you about what's happening in the city, as well as some upcoming events. And later on in the show, I'll bring you some highlights of the Tent City protest that's happening in the downtown east side. This is CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Making a cuppa? Stop! How many cups of tea are you making? What? There's enough for 10 cups in there. Only boil the amount of water that you actually need. Very good, old boy.
That's right. The British are making less tea to conserve energy. Students can conserve energy, too.
A student's life often follows a pattern. Eat, sleep, study. During this routine, don't forget to make time for energy conservation. This will be the easiest thing you do all semester, and a little bit goes a long way. Do your laundry in cold water and hang clothes on standing dry racks or clotheslines instead of using electricity-intensive dryers. If a dryer is the only option, throw in a dry towel with wet clothes to absorb moisture and cut down on drying time.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9.
LiveVan.com is Vancouver's most reputable community-driven concert calendar. New shows are listed daily by the city's most prominent promoters, but also by you. The musicians and fans were the driving force of our local music scene. LiveVan.com's listings are different because they're personalized. They're integrated with local music directories that are constantly updated by the bands, musicians, and businesses who refer to them as they pick locations and lineups for their newest upcoming shows. And no one's barred from contributing, since we all know fans know more about the players than anyone. So visit livemusicvancouver.com for the latest major and independent event listings. And while you're at it, check out our archives and discover how closely we all work together in this community, putting on the shows you love.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Welcome back. I'm Brad Pepping, broadcasting from the Student Union Building in Vancouver, British Columbia, and this is News 101. I want to now offer you some updates of what's happening in the city, as well as highlight some upcoming events that are happening in the city. And for our regular listeners, you may have already heard what's going on, but it's good just to reiterate what's happening. I want to stress that while many Olympic resistors have been helping out with the Tent City protests, activists have been reporting about police targeting them on the street. And police have actually been continuing to pursue organizers and participants of last weekend's, Saturday's protest. If you want to check this interview out, it's at 2010.mediacoop.ca, and Vancouver Media Co-op put together this interview with one activist who recalls his arrest on Saturday when police identified him on the street, and they subsequently targeted him for riding his bike on the sidewalk. The activist discusses his belief that police unfairly targeted him for this minor offense, and pursuing him, charged him with obstructing a peace officer. After searching his possessions, they discovered an anti-Olympics set of materials, and this activist was then detained and only released on bail 30 hours later. Also, there was the leader of the Olympics Resistance Network, according to the Vancouver Police Department, was arrested and charged and released with conditions that he not organize protest marches in the future. The Vancouver Media Co-op wrote in a blog on Wednesday that this individual now faces a charge of counseling mischief and, quote, that more resembles an Orwellian thought crime than a serious offense, end quote. In total, 11 people have been charged in connection with the protests, including one Western Washington University student who has agreed to be deported in exchange for his charges being dropped. In the city, I want to highlight some events that are coming up that anyone can participate in. If you're in Vancouver, you can participate live in person, which is pretty cool. Or you can participate, if you're not in Vancouver, you can check them out online. First, I want to highlight that for the better half of this past decade, campus and community radio stations have rallied together to address homelessness in Canada through our presence on radio airwaves. Serving up 14 hours of people-powered radio, the annual Homelessness Marathon, which is organized by CKUT in Montreal, will be taking place on February 23rd from sunrise to sunset, which is this Tuesday. The event aims to raise consciousness and offer an opportunity for homeless people and their allies to share their stories. This nationwide discussion on homelessness starts in Montreal with live broadcasts from cities across the country. And on Tuesday, CJSF Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University is hosting a two-hour segment of the marathon. In dialogue with local artists who have been affected by homelessness, the live broadcast will air from 8 to 10 p.m. in Vancouver, and you can catch it here on CITR 101.9 FM or on any of the other 40 stations across the country. The event will, or I guess the broadcast will be taking place at the W2 Culture and Media House, which is on West Hastings Street. CJSF is engaging with the community in an effort to address many of the issues that have been raised during the Olympics, especially as is obvious, homelessness and what's going on in Canada with a national homelessness crisis. This opportunity to broadcast from the W2 Culture and Media House is actually quite exciting for us newsies and radio folk in Vancouver. It is home to the unaccredited media visiting for the Olympics, and W2 aims to provide a, quote, vibrant and complementary focal point, and it acts as a catalyst in the revitalization of the Vancouver Downtown East Side by emphasizing the development capacity by and for Downtown East Side residents, end quote. So while the W2 building has been the home for bloggers and journalists, it has also served as the headquarters for the Legal Observer program, the one we are speaking today about with Greg McMullen. Also, the W2 is operating 24 hours a day, and they're hosting international observers and guests and bloggers and journalists for the games, including art activists from London, Liverpool, and Brooklyn. On Tuesday, not only is the homelessness marathon on the 23rd, on Tuesday the 22nd, W2 is hosting a conference to address the impact on social media tools on the coverage of the 2010 Winter Games. The conference will question what difference exists between how citizen journalists utilize social media to cover the games and the way corporate media broadcasts the stories. The conference features a keynote from Andy Mia, author of A Digital Olympics, Digital Games, Ethics, and Cultures, and will also feature experts from the traditional and social media, as well as bloggers and academia, who will all explore how news media is impacting the IOC's ability to control its message and hand exclusivity to its investor brands. Panelists will also consider the implications of new media for Olympics coverage in London 2012 and beyond. This is really exciting for News 101 here at CITR because of the ways in which we are engaging with social media. You can always find us on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and we're also podcasting. So these are issues that our listeners and our newsies are very engaged with. Lastly, if you're in a city, you can take part in that conference just by going down there, or W2 will be web streaming the conference to reach viewers outside of Vancouver, so you can catch that on their website. What's happening tomorrow, W2 is also hosting a panel to address the diversity of tactics used by protesters last Saturday in the heart attack protest that happened in the city. Lastly, we will touch on this in the next few moments, but I just want to say again that there will be a rally for a national housing program that will start tomorrow at 12 p.m. on the north side of the Vancouver Art Gallery. This one is in partnership with the Pivot Legal Society, as well as highlighting some of the issues that are going on with the Tent City protest. We're going to take another quick break, but I want you to come back. When we're back, we'll be hearing from organizers of the Tent City protest, as well as some of the participants, about why it's important to engage with this type of activity. I'm Brad Pepping, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia. This is News 101, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Yo, this is Speech, and right now you're listening to CITR 101.9. Peace.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666, or contact us online at www.aidsvancouver.org.
CITR podcast update number 1.
Work has begun on Canada's information highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. Without getting too technical, tell me how what you're working on is different from what's available to me right now.
So right now, if you want to listen to your favorite CITR program, you need to be listening to it on your radio live or streaming over the internet live. But with CITR podcasts, you'll be able to download your favorite show and listen to it whenever you want, on your computer or on your MP3 player.
I'm just thinking about that.
I know, it's pretty rad.
For more information, visit CITR.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening, and please be kind to robots.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you.
I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man! He's melting!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power science world for over 75 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back. I'm Brad Pepping, broadcasting from the Student Union Building in Vancouver, British Columbia. The current time is 5:25, and this is News 101. The Tent City protest has been started on Monday night here in Vancouver and is hoping to address homelessness issues and affordability in the city. The following is a clip from the Vancouver Media Co-op about the rally that launched the campaign called No More Empty Talks, No More Empty Lots.
Why am I homeless? Why am I homeless? Why in this land? Why are so many crowded? Where do you want to
Today the event is called No More Empty Lots, No More Empty Talk. And so it's led by a great number of organizations in Vancouver who are fighting for a national housing program and who are trying to bring awareness to the fact that Canada is the only GA country without a national housing program, and homelessness is rampant across the country. So we're tired of hearing about lies that Rich Coleman, our housing minister, is actually creating housing, because we don't see it here on the ground. We just see an increase in homelessness. So that's why we're saying no more empty talk and no more empty lots. It's time to build social housing.
The No More Empty Talks, No More Empty Lots activity launched the Tent City protest. To find out what that was, I spoke with organizer Harsha Walia earlier today, and here's that conversation. On the line, I have Harsha Walia of the Downtown Eastside Women's Association. Is that right?
Yep.
I was hoping that if you could tell us a little bit about what's going on with this Tent City protest. It was started on Monday night, and today's Friday, so maybe you could tell us how it came about, how it started, and what's been happening since then.
Well, the Tent City came about by Downtown Eastside residents, and the idea was, particularly during the Olympics, to bring to light the systemic poverty that residents in the Downtown Eastside face. This is, of course, something that predates the Olympics, but that has escalated as a result of the 2010 Winter Olympics, and to basically to highlight the rising amounts of poverty as well as the ongoing gentrification in the neighborhood. We have over 1,800 condo units that are being built in the poorest neighborhood in Canada, and at the same time a really heavy and increasing police presence that is socially cleansing and criminalizing the poor. So the Tent City was set up as a response to this reality, as a safe space, as a sanctuary for homeless people, people on the street, people in precarious housing situations, to have a place to go and at the same time to raise awareness about the conditions in the Downtown Eastside.
And can you tell us a little bit about the atmosphere of what it's like to be down there? Are people kind of engaging with this? Are there a lot of people? And I don't know. I guess just what's the atmosphere?
It's been pretty amazing. It's been relatively smooth. People have been taking on a whole lot of kind of organizing within the space. People are treating it like their living rooms, as people like to call it. So people have set up guidelines around how the space should be treated. What kind of ways people want to live. There's meetings on a daily basis to organize things like food and security and fire and collecting wood. In terms of law enforcement, there's been a minimal response from law enforcement about the Tent City.
Well, maybe you could touch on that. Earlier this week, we actually heard a report that two undercover police agents were actually removed from the Tent City. What happened there?
There has been beat patrols and police who have come into the Tent City. We've had the fire department, the city, the engineering department. In terms of the incident with the police, there was two police officers that had basically infiltrated the site since Monday. And on Tuesday morning, they were identified with their earpieces and were escorted out of the site.
And maybe you could touch upon what could we expect for the next few days with the Tent City protest? I know that there's a rally tomorrow at the Art Gallery. Is this part of the Tent City protest?
Nope. The rally for housing has been called by the IOCC, the Impact on Communities Coalition, which is separate from the Tent City but autonomous, and then that, you know, some of the demands are parallel. That's happening at the Vancouver Art Gallery. The Tent City will be continuing for the next week and beyond that, potentially indefinitely, as far as we know. And so we are looking for support. We need constant support, particularly from medics, from people who are able to provide food, that people who are able to cook food, donations, blankets, tarps, sleeping bags, and just supporters to be present during the site, particularly, basically 24 hours, because it's really vulnerable to law enforcement activity anytime they see that the number of people present is decreasing.
Maybe before we go, you could touch on just kind of the last message that you want to get across. What are you hoping that the tent city will achieve?
It's hard to say. I think different people have different visions of it at this point. I think in the very least, to raise awareness about the very real daily lived realities of people in the downtown east side. You know, the Olympics are almost gone, but the conditions of poverty in the downtown east side have only increased and been made worse over the past several years. And that's something for people to keep in mind. I know right now there's a lot of media attention around everything that's Olympic and anti-Olympic related. And also beyond that, it's a space that's being defended. It's a safe space that's being defended. There's no cops that are welcome there. It's a space that's really dignified and has a community spirit to it. It's not something that's being set up by service providers. It's being driven by downtown Eastside residents and elders. And so it really, I think its kind of biggest strength is the spirit of community living that it's aspiring to uphold.
That was Harsha Walia, an organizer of the Tent City protest that's happening right now in the downtown east side in Vancouver. Earlier this week, I also spoke with some participants of the protests, and while they aren't residents of the downtown east side, they expressed their identification of homelessness as an issue that stretches beyond a specific neighborhood. They expressed an allegiance with people as part of a Vancouver community. Here's what they had to say. On the line, I have one of the protesters, or one of the people that was participating in a protest yesterday, which was the Tent City protest. And I was hoping if you could just walk us through your involvement in that protest, and maybe you could tell us some of your interests and why you wanted to participate.
Sure. Participating in events like this are, I think, a very important part of the democratic process. Our legal system is meant to be there to protect the people, and when people on the streets don't have access to appropriate services and care and their basic rights aren't being met, I think it's important and appropriate to be there and support their efforts to have their voices heard.
At first, you know, I mean, part of what's been interesting through this is I wouldn't consider myself a very hardline person in a lot of these issues. I tend to be aware of them. This is the community of people that I sympathize with. Politically, you know, I guess the way I've been sort of putting it to people is that I'm like, if I'm going to be out supporting any community during these events right now, these are the people I want to be with, because they are, they're just as much members of my community as anyone else in Vancouver. And I think they're the people who are being overlooked and basically screwed over by the events that are happening right now. And so I figure, for me, it's you know, I wasn't totally clear on it. I've been becoming more clear on it over the past few days. And for example, I'm not there to camp out. I'm not there to take over the space myself personally. I'm there to support the efforts of people from that community who are members of my community at large, in their bid to raise awareness and to take care of their own needs in terms of housing. And if I can be there simply to be a body there that's showing support, that's showing the fact that, you know, people outside the downtown east side do care and do support the members of that community rather than sort of writing them off.
And so over the last few days, there's been actually a bit of backlash with the activities in this city, where on Saturday, the violent protest that took place with members of the Black Bloc may have kind of swayed public sympathy away from any future protest. Is there any final words that you'd try to spread to Vancouverites or our guests about what it means to be a part of this protest? And as you say, you weren't actively camping out, but would you recommend that people just go down there and hang out and hear what's happening?
I think that's the point, is that a lot of the protests so far, with the exception of those particular individuals, basically, have been really good about simply trying to spread the message and about curbing militant tendencies. This protest in particular, if you go down there, the a lot of Native elders are there. A lot of elders in the community are there. It's not just a bunch of young yahoos, actually. The environment yesterday was very interesting because I'd say about a third of the people were people around our age, university students, et cetera. And then most of the other people were middle-aged or older. And so that one particularly is a very peaceful community event. They're just trying to live in the space for a little while, and I think people would be encouraged to come down and to listen, particularly to just to listen, to really hear what people's stories are, to hear what they have to say. And I know if people want to take active part, there's a website for it, I believe. They're looking for certain supplies, tents and sleeping bags and that sort of thing. And I think they also need people to kind of come and help and watch over the space so that the people who really need it can have, you know, shelter for the night, and rest and sleep and not have to worry, and other people can perhaps keep an eye out for their safety in that sense. But I think the biggest thing is that really the gist of this is that there are voices not being heard. And I think in terms of the community at large, it's, you know, I feel it's very important that I'm not there, for example, to speak for these people. I'm there to say, I'm here to listen. I'm here to tell other people to listen, if they won't. And I think that there's got to be more cross-community engagement so that it's not just the downtown east side trying to talk to a deaf and dumb Vancouver.
We're going to take another quick break now, but when we come back, we'll be hearing from Am Johal of the IOCC about the protest that's happening tomorrow at the Vancouver Art Gallery. This is CITR 101.9 FM, and you're listening to News 101.
Thanks to sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Price is still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge. You're off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Tuesday, February 23rd, beginning at sunset in Montreal, broadcasting live on your local campus and community radio station.
Sometimes we get that instant homelessness. We didn't expect to be homeless, and we find ourselves on the street because of an eviction or a notice.
Canada's largest talk show on poverty and homelessness.
We have a mayor who compared poor people to pigeons publicly and said that if you stop feeding them, they'll go away.
The 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, broadcasting February 23rd to 24th. A 14-hour live radio show from frozen street corners across Canada. Call in live, join the discussion.
Our demand from the federal government is $2 billion a year for social housing units across Canada. That'll just help us to start catching up to the 15 years that we've lost in building social housing in this country. It's really a glaring example of the negligence of the government.
Visit www.ckut.ca for more info.
The Homelessness Marathon will be broadcasting live from Vancouver on Tuesday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. As CITR 101.9 FM partners with CJSF 90.1 FM and Co-op 102.7 FM to bring you an hour of interviews and stories of how the 2010 Olympics are affecting homelessness in Vancouver. Visit CITR.ca for more information.
CITR is super popular. We've partnered with great local businesses to bring all our friends discounts in their communities. Say you like to kick it in kits. Show your friends of CITR card at Canterbury Tales Secondhand Books, Rufus's Guitar Shop, Prussian Music, The Eatery, Grindhouse Video, Fresh's Best Salsa & Co., Roy Shoes Limited, Vaz Boutique, Sage Natural Wellness, Gumdrops, Spank Shoes, Banyan Books, and the UBC Bike Kitchen. And save! So become a CITR member, get a free friends card, and feel the love. Well,
listen.
Radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
Welcome back. You're listening to News 101 on CITR. And I'm Brad Pepping. Thanks so much for being with me tonight. I now have an interview with the IOCC, the Impact on Community Coalition, and the executive director of that, who is Am Johal. I spoke with Am about the rally that's going on tomorrow and actually starting tonight to address Canada's national housing crisis. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, my name is Am Johal. I'm with the Impact on Communities Coalition, an Olympic watchdog group, and I'm involved with the Red Tent housing campaign.
And can you tell us about the Red Tent housing campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. This past week, a housing squat started on Hastings Street, which included, as part of the Red Tent campaign, where Pivot Legal Society and a number of other organizations are going to be distributing about 500 tents around the region to homeless people. And the action is aimed at pushing for a national housing program in the country. Tonight, in fact, people are going to be sleeping overnight near Science World as an act of solidarity with the squat that's happening. And people are going to wake up in the morning, have some muffins and coffee, and head over to the Vancouver Art Gallery for a rally for a national housing program that's happening tomorrow there on the north side on Georgia Street.
And so can you tell us about this rally tomorrow? Why are people engaging with Canada's national housing program?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a housing movement in this city. We call it the Right to the City. It's about affordability. It's not just about homelessness, but also affordability. Canada has one of the most expensive housing markets in the country, and this has all sorts of social impacts. There's 300,000 homeless people in Canada. In BC, it's between 10,500 and 15,000 people. And over the Olympic period, we've actually, since the bid was awarded to Vancouver to the day the opening ceremonies took place, homelessness more than doubled in that time frame. So we are going to be sending a message to government right in the middle of the Olympics that we demand the reestablishment of a national housing program. From the early 70s to the early 90s, we had one of the best social housing programs in the country. And when that was canceled, we've had a proliferation of homelessness across the country. And so tomorrow we're hoping to have a whole lot of people out there at the Vancouver Art Gallery in solidarity with people who are homeless to push for a national housing program.
Maybe you could give us a little bit more detail as to what you're hoping maybe our lawmakers and our politicians could be acting on. What type of recommendations would you have for them in terms of a national housing program?
Yeah, I also wanted to mention there's going to be about 200 red tents we're going to have out in front of the art gallery, so it'll be quite a visual display. We're pushing specifically for something called the 1% solution. University of Toronto Urban Studies professor David Holchansky actually did a very remarkable and rigorous study that looked at how we could actually reduce the levels of homelessness and how we could actually invest in it in a long-term way. And he said if we spent 1% of the federal budget on social housing and we had matching funding from the provincial government and donations of land from civic governments, that we could actually reduce housing and homelessness issues over time. So what we're specifically demanding is not just a national housing program, but the 1% solution. And we're not only going to be distributing these tents around Vancouver, but we're hoping that other places like Toronto and Montreal and Ottawa, Edmonton, other parts of the country are also going to join in for this call for a national housing program.
And as you say, you know, it's having that many tents at the Vancouver Art Gallery certainly is very eye-catching. And many of our listeners may actually have seen that while Stephen Colbert was filming the Colbert Report here in Vancouver near Science World, there were actually some activists with red tents down near the filming, and I guess just trying to get a bit more media attention there.
Absolutely, which is why there's going to be partly people sleeping over at Main Street, and not only will they practically provide shelter for people, but they'll also be in high traffic areas around the Olympics for the rest of the games as well.
And so maybe you could touch upon how this project came about. To my understanding, it's based on a similar activity that happened in Paris?
Yes, that's right. In about 3 or 4 years ago, I believe it was 2006, about 200 red tents were distributed around Paris to highlight the issues around homelessness and to push for government policy changes. Here in Vancouver, what drove this campaign was originally a Supreme Court decision based in Victoria, where homeless people were sleeping in the park and they were using civic bylaws to fine people. And eventually the BC Supreme Court decided that if you're homeless and shelters are full, you have the right to sleep outside during a park, and you do have to pick up your tent in the morning and allow the public to use the park at different times. But they came down with a fairly balanced and reasonable decision. And so here, Vancouver also has a series of bylaws that can criminalize or fine people for sleeping outside. And if the city does decide to fine people, then certainly that would be taken to court by the Pivot Legal Society. But the point is not just to strike down a local bylaw. We want to deal with the systemic issue of investment in social housing. And so the campaign itself is aimed at pushing for a national housing program. You know, it's a real health and human rights disaster in the country. The UN has called it a national housing emergency. We've hosted Maloon Qatari, the UN Special Rapporteur on Housing, here in Vancouver, who stated the same thing. And in terms of the coroner's reports, we know that the health and human rights impacts are incredible. The average age of homeless people who have died is 45. We know from the coroner's report that about once every 12 days or so, there's a death of a homeless person in the province of BC. This is having an incredible toll on people's lives. They're literally losing years off of their life. In the summer, an Aboriginal man died during one of the hottest summers of the year. We've had people accidentally lit on fire because they had candles lit when they were sleeping outside in the cold. So, you know, we're one of the wealthiest countries in the world, and if we can spend $900 million on security for the Olympics on a one-time event or on speed skating ovals and luge tracks, we can certainly coalesce public policy and investment to deal with social housing, because in my view, it's far more important than a two-week circus that we've been investing in for the past 8 years.
And if this strikes a chord with some of our listeners, not only can they take part in the protest tomorrow, which is at the Vancouver Art Gallery, is it 12 o'clock?
Yes, that's right.
Are there other ways that they can get involved?
Yeah, people can come over and sleep over tonight at Science World. There will be tents available. People can bring all their own rest of their gear, but they're welcome to show up around 7:30, and there's going to be bands and music tonight. Also, you can go onto the website, redtents.org.
That was Impact on Community Coalition Board Chair Amjad Hal speaking with me earlier today about the Red Tent campaign. We're going to take one last quick break. This is News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I'm Walter Cronkite. I'd like you to hear something.
Any way you want it, that's the way you need it. Any way you want it.
They're radio fans, amateurs, giving of their own time and spending their own money.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Your volunteer-run station.
They're just two average guys who saw the need and volunteered.
Remember when you first learned about the birds and the bees? Want to learn more about the birds and the bees and the berries? Urban agriculture, delicious homegrown food, solar energy, and much more. Check out the Society Promoting Environmental Conservation. Come to one of our workshops, join our solar panel tour, or go to our website, www.spec.bc.ca, for more information.
I'm going to be around. My vegetables, I'm gonna chow down. My vegetables, I love you most of all. My favorite vegetable.
Sprouts. It's your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub.
It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies.
It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce.
It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems.
Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply.
Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tenny flew right off. I'm red as a bee, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a big sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
Welcome back. This is Brad Pepping, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And this is News 101. I want to thank you all very much for listening tonight. That's all for the show today. Jumping out of here so that I can get some more Olympics coverage for you. And if you want to catch this Olympics coverage, which I am producing for you very dedicatedly, let's say. I'm producing these headlines that are being aired on the station at 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. every day of the week, and I'll also be back on Monday for another edition of News 101. You can also catch those mini spots, those Olympic mini spots, on our partner stations from across the country, including Nanaimo, Calgary, Windsor, Montreal, and hopefully anywhere else where people are listening. Again, this is News 101. I want to thank everyone very much for listening, and I hope that you have a great day. Catch us on Twitter or on Facebook, or send us an email at news@citr.ca. From everyone here at the news team, thanks so much for listening, and have yourselves a great weekend.